there's about a 20% to 30% yield increase.
There's benefits to
of
having
pollination in your area, right? Yeah. So, and there's a I would say probably more closer to a 3 to 5 kilometer radius that the bees can go.
At least.
Right? Like they won't fly out that distance, but they can go out to that distance, right? Okay. So even if a farmer has bees close and they don't even know it, they're pollinating.
They're benefiting.
Knowledge for Resilience, a cross-commodity podcast brought to you jointly by the Peace River Forage Association, the Peace Region Forage Seed Association, and the BC Grain Producers Association. Welcome to episode 26. I'm your host, Nadia Mori. Today, I'm talking with Cole and Colleen Casey from Nordic Vale Honey Farm. Their vision is to deliver locally sourced, high-quality honey farm products to Northern BC, Alberta, and beyond. In their own words, they describe that they started looking at creative options to help them feel fulfilled while also being able to provide for their family. Both Cole and Colleen were raised on farms, out in towns in northern rural communities. So agriculture in the Peace region was a very natural choice for them. Managing bees was an innovative way for them to start their adventure. And after working with the honeybees for only a few times, they were both hooked. I guess it's a pretty sticky thing, so you kind of get stuck in it. So without further ado, let's get buzzing like a bee. Today I have a chat with Nordic Vale Honey Farms, and we have Cole and Colleen Casey joining us. Hi.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
To get us started, you got such a fascinating background. I'd love to hear a bit about your history and how you got into honey production.
Well, it's kind of a funny story.
It started for a passion for brewing.
Yeah. To be honest, I went to Lakeland College in Vermilion. So I took conservation and restoration ecology. So I have a background in that. I'm kind of a plant head originally. As a kid, I was also in 4-H and entomology and stuff like that. So bugs always kind of got me a little bit with bees, but that's another story. Mm-hmm. So I started the second year. I ended up being the RA of the campus, and a bunch of us RAs got together and realized that we couldn't have a keg in our dorms, but there was nothing in the policies or rules that said that we could not brew alcohol. So
the dorm smelled like a bakery. There was yeast and
yeah. So it was a couple of the RAs ended up doing wine, and I picked up beer. So I started making beer, and I started really getting interested into making that. And then after I was done college, I kind of set that aside for I think a couple of years. But then I found honey wine. So I found mead. It really took off from there. I was really excited about it. You can do almost anything with mead. It was amazing, the compositions of it and all the different flavors you can make. And generally, because of the properties of honey itself, it's really stable and generally. So it doesn't get, you don't get too much of the bacteria. Like it can happen, but it's a little easier, a little harder to get. So I started making mead, and then I realized that honey was kind of expensive. So I was like, well, since honey's expensive, how about I get into bees? So I did bees, started in bees. We started with two hives.
It was a way to get back to farming and agriculture too. Like that's, we grew up on farms and we wanted to live out of town and raise our kids with farm experience too, right? So bees was a way to kind of
bridge that gap.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we got into bees, and then we got more into bees, and it just kept on going from a hobby to now a full-time business. So now, yeah, so that's the
gist
in the nutshell. Yeah.
Journey.
Amazing. And what are some of the products that you make? It's not just honey, right? There's so much you can do with.
Yeah, we have some unique beeswax candles, Nordic. So we have Green Man Tree, we have like Mother Gaia, Earth Goddess kind of candle, and Lotus Bloom flowers. We have a dragon. The dragon's pretty great. I don't know. They're all my favorite. We have a big pine cone and like evergreen trees. There's all kinds. And then we also have the traditional pillars as well as like votives and tapers.
Yeah. So we also do food wraps is one of our newest things. So we got into that a little bit and looking to expand that a little bit.
Beeswax food wraps, instead of saran wrap.
Yeah, it's really kind of cool product.
Green, so. You know, compostable, it's all natural with all of our products.
And then I have a beard. So I started with I had a big beard actually. And then I always bought oil and waxes and everything
styling.
Else. Styling waxes. And so I made myself a mustache wax myself. And actually a guy called me up. It was his idea. He was moving up to Alaska and he said, well, can you make a mustache wax that's quite firm? I can't find one that's firm enough. And I said, well, let me take a stab at it. So I made this firm wax and he loved it. So I just continued on with that. So we have three different product lines with that one, three mustache waxes. I'm looking into beard wax, but
the ladies haven't really done that. Seem to really enjoy the mustache wax also for eyebrow styling. So sometimes some markets, they're buying more than the men are.
And then what else do we have? Yeah, we got Taylor's wax, which is basically wax in a can, just for beaters, crafters. Yeah. And then we also sell like the larger blocks too for any of the larger.
Or in the beads and different.
Larger crafters out there. So we do that. And I mean, the product list keeps on coming in. Like there's so much interest. You can do and so much interest, like beads, lip balms and all the.
The different products you can make from it.
Yeah, it's amazing. So we keep on finding stuff. Mm-hmm. So
well, and it seems to me like if you were able to figure out that you could brew beer, even though you couldn't have a keg of beer in your dorm, you seem like the innovator that could do pretty much anything.
Yeah, someone gives me an idea, I'll make it. So leather polish. I've done leather polish too. There's some people in White Corps brought up to me. So one ex-military guy, and I said, well, let's see what I can do. So I had it for his boots. So, those products do pretty good. I put them on my boots all the time. Yeah, weatherproofing and leather conditioner. So, and I've given it to other crafters, anybody, saddles. So there's a lot of different stuff you can play around, right? And mead. So I still make mead on the side. So I make a lot of batches.
And the bees so, but that's themselves personal. Too, right? Like we're just constantly expanding and getting more. So don't think I realized how much equipment was involved in like especially large scale operations.
we've dipped a little bit also into pollen, kind of playing around with that. It's kind of a superfood, kind of have that on our kitchen table, kind of sitting there. Our kids love it.
It's like candy.
It's like candy and it's just like high energy. Like you take a little teaspoon of that and you're set for the day. So we don't have that on sale right now. There's a little bit more policy when it comes to sale of pollen, but we do enjoy it.
So. Mm-hmm. And the bees.
The benefits.
Oh, the benefits.
Amazing. And the bees.
Yeah.
So much to unpack. You mentioned the equipment. Do you maybe want to share a little bit for somebody who might not know what's all involved or when you go from sort of that backyard hive to actually producing for commercial production, what's a person would have to invest for that or look into?
Well, we were lucky. Do you want to? Okay, so we were kind of lucky. We actually applied to the BC.
Getting some grants.
Yeah, we went some grants. So we did the BC Agricultural Fund and they were great. They were absolutely great. And we actually applied right in the middle of COVID or right kind of before COVID. So they were great and patient with us on that. A lot of the equipment was shipped from the States. So there's
so much uncertainty around that time in you know, different ways.
Yeah. Yeah. The stainless steel was the big issue down there mostly. So it was the bigger companies are more in Europe where there's really two down in the States. There's Maxint and Dandant. So I'm not sure if I pronounced that right. That's my Canadian accent there. But so we went with one company that was more family owned and orientated. I kind of liked. I liked their equipment. It seemed a little stronger. So we ordered a bunch of that and the nice thing about that grant was they paid for basically half our equipment. So what we did is we ended up getting enough equipment for about 60 bees. So that's our boxes, frames, hives, you name it. And we went through Bee Made in the Honey Producers of Alberta in Edmonton. And they're great to work with too.
They're a good company.
Yeah, we really enjoy them. And then Maxint was the one down in the States. So we ordered, let's see, what do I have? I got a 20 frame extractor. So that's kind of the main piece. And most of the time you buy them, like my first few years, I only had a 2-frame manual one. So you just kind of ran it with your hand a little bit. I actually rigged it up on a drill because I was getting tired of like turning it. So I did just a drill, like a plug-in drill, and I just ran that super hard. So
and standing on it because it's got to keep it stable.
Yeah, I didn't have it into the floor. So I'm just holding it with two hands, you know, going through. So that was
quite
pretty fun.
Extraction and, season.
Yeah. So 2 years of doing that, I was done. I was like, no, like I want to do something. So we ended up picking up
better system.
Yeah, better system.
More efficient.
Yeah. So we ended up getting a 20 frame extractor. We ended up picking up a wax separator, which was really handy, a capping separator. That separator really kind of bumps it up, and it filters like all the normal cappings and wax that you have, and really you can push that last little bit of honey out. Because a lot of times when you're decapping, you get a mix of like wax and honey, right? And it's kind of tough to separate that. And it takes a long time. So that separator really, just a big drum that spins, it's basically a dryer. And then we picked up tub, a
bottler.
We picked a bottler, which was really handy. And we had
a clarifier and a pump,
a honey pump. Right. So, and then we kind of had that all in the system, and they called it the sideliner system. So just
yeah, it was
kind of
like a whole
beans.
Extraction line of equipment. Yeah. So it's like, and there was more options and things you can get in there too.
Yeah. Next year's line is another filter wax we're planning. Melter. Yeah. Wax melter. There's a couple of things you can do. So that really kind of separates, you know,
from the hobby
to everything else. And then you can really get bigger. Like there's different types of extractors. They're really nice. There's kind of a vertical to a horizontal ones, and those horizontal are great. That's kind of on the list. So that's
the
next thing.
Systems.
Yeah. But it really jumps up. I mean, you can really beekeeping with your equipment very minimal. Like it's very easy to do it. So even the hobby beekeeper, there's really not much you have to spend on that to make it work. So, I mean, I did it. So yeah.
Well, thanks for sharing that. And the other thing you touched on was food safety, and some of the products that you might like to sell probably have a bit more paperwork that comes with it, right? So do you want to elaborate on that? Like maybe some challenges you've encountered or things that are maybe a bit tricky to navigate?
Yeah, exporting. If you're selling, the nice thing about honey is that because of the properties of honey, the CRA doesn't really look at it as too much of a serious threat when it comes to bacteria. They're
antimicrobial, it's antibacterial ready. It's got all those properties. If you're storing it properly, it doesn't really go bad. Even 3,000 years, right?
Yeah, they found it in Egypt 3,000 years ago and they still ate it, right? So it's great stuff.
It was still good, apparently.
So basically they had that. So honey itself is really safe. So, but it starts coming into a little more difficulty when you start exporting. So when you start sending it out to
areas you're going to and how much like stricter that looks.
Yeah. So going off to Alberta or, you know, overseas, you end up coming into a few other issues. So overseas, each country has its different standards that you have to meet. Labeling is a big one. So generally on labeling is that you got to have
certain requirements.
Yeah, certain requirements. Yeah. And it's not that bad. I mean, it's kind of place,
made
location,
Canada.
Made in Canada, yeah. What kind of honey you can put it in. You can go and get it tested. So the number one honeys, number two honeys. You can get that tested if you want. It's not a requirement. You can definitely do it. The batch number, the date processed, the kilograms. Yeah, there's a little list, but labeling is definitely one to look at. But if you're selling locally, I mean, you can just generally just stick honey on it, right? It's probably
if
you just want to stick honey. Generally, I mean, it's a good idea to put your, you know, name and numbers so they can call you back. So,
some contact information.
Yeah, basically. But that's some of the biggest ones. The honey house itself, there's a bunch of standards too that you have to keep with that. So there's a hygiene and safety issues and
so we have a nice stainless steel
labeling
equipment and things are made to.
Yeah, we haven't dipped into the export, but we definitely looked it up. We haven't exported yet. That's going to say, but it's not.
Local,
yeah, we're
in the area.
Yeah, there's enough local people around here and enough good honey that we have a pretty good community that supports us with that. So
and all of BC to work with first too.
Yeah. Then there's BC too. So I mean, I've shipped some of my honey down to Vancouver. a little bit. People's picked it up from other places too. So there's something about our Peace River honey that people love. It's a pure white clover, just a really fresh tasting clover, right? And the how our summers kind of work. I mean, we're in this beautiful area. I mean, it's same thing with the grains and everything else. We have this intense summer, right? Yeah. So the bees kind of move 24/7. So we get large amount of honey if you're good at it. Some people can get over 200, 300 pounds in one hive, right? On a good year. So we get this mass amount, this beautiful clover honey, and people down, I've had a few people down south that keep on calling me up every year and they're like, we want more.
Yeah, ship it to us. So, shipping's practically the same price.
Yeah, that's another thing. Shipping of honey is expensive.
Product, and they don't care. Yeah. They're willing to pay. So yeah, we'll get it to them. Yeah.
Excellent. That speaks for your product right there.
It's all the bees.
Yeah, we literally steal from them. We're thieves.
We're helping them out.
We help them out, but they help us. We scratch their back, they scratch ours.
Speaking of, you know, helping them out, the bees have been in the news quite a bit about struggles with overwintering and disease. Do you want to share kind of your experience, how maybe it has affected you or what you're worried about?
Yeah. I won't go into detail. Yeah, where to start on that one? There's a big learning curve getting into beekeeping. Like, and every single year, it's not really the same. Habbers, right? Yeah, it used to be bee havers, and now you're beekeepers. You got to do a lot more management now than you used to, you know, back in the day. So we've had every single pretty much predator attack us and get our bees. So we've had 1 year, I think it was our second year in. Shrews was our first year. So we thought we did it. And then this year, too, we've had shrew issues. We had a smart little shrew got into, I thought I had it safe, but apparently not. So I had one of my sites get attacked pretty heavy with a shrew. Actually, about probably five of them, maybe. Yeah. So there was, shrews is a bad one, at least for me. Some people don't see it.
It's a high rodent year, I think. There seems to be lots.
Yeah. And we've had bear attacks. We had 3 bear attacks in one season from 2 different bears.
In a few days,
back and forth. I ended chasing one off with a pitchfork one night.
Near the end of the season at the fall, right? When you need them to just gather their resources and, you know, then they're just getting battered around by a big old bear. Yeah,
so bear attacks was pretty heavy. And that one, you kind of have to live with them more than anything else.
We were just like reinforcing fencing like every day. We were doing more, adding another layer and trying to like,
The wind knocked off my fencer and they didn't do too well, but learned our lesson with that one. But you kind of have to live with them a little bit with the bears, right? And kind of more your area and your protection and dogs and all your other stuff. Mites, the varroa mite is a constant
huge
check.
Problem. Yeah.
Yeah.
Decimating hives.
I can't.
Disease.
I can't highlight enough on how.
Gotta constantly be on the lookout for mites.
They can definitely decimate a hive, and you won't really notice it sometimes if you're not really paying attention. So they kind of grow behind the bees. So during the summer, there's a big increase of bee population while the mites increase at the same time. And then right at the fall, those bee populations kind of die off a little bit while those mites still, they're behind. So those mites still climb up. And so sometime in September and October, if you're not on top of that, they'll kill a hive.
And they're increasingly resistant to treatment, so they're just all kinds of challenging. Like, they're doing a lot of research and studies and trying to monitor. There was like a big scare to try to keep it out of your country if you can, you know. They're already here in BC, we've got them, you know, but at least we're not contending with some of the moths and like, or some of the other things they
beetles.
Get in other areas.
Down south, there's a few other things, hive beetles and all. But the mites are all over the place. We just have to live with it now and try to manage it
as
properly,
best
we can. So it's constant tests. So we constantly check our bees, right, for mites, and we have a threshold that kind of goes. If we pass that threshold, then, you know, a treatment will come in. Depending on the season changes, what kind of treatment we'll do.
Yeah, learning all kinds of things.
Yeah. And there's different ones too, right? So there's, you know, there's your chemical treatment. There's your mechanical treatment. So mechanical treatment is they actually have drone frames that you can put in, and the bees will actually build the drone, and then the varroa mites will go to the drones because they're fatter, they're bigger, they have more fat on them. So the varroas will kind of go to those drones, and after you get them pretty filled up and you got them capped. You basically pull them off, you throw them into the freezer, you freeze them up, you get them out of the area, right? And it's just, that's more of a management, right? Just keeping that population low more than anything else until you can get to it with something else. So that...
And yeah, so there's different techniques that would be more like relevant to different operations depending on what the goals are, right? So yeah, it's what you can work with.
Yeah, nothing's worse than those destructors. So
it's learning and trial and error.
Yeah.
Just knowing better for next time and keep going. Yeah.
Just like in other types of farming, right? Where
absolutely. Yeah.
A lot of things.
Yeah, you're managing livestock. So it's the same deal, just a lot smaller, a lot more condensed, right?
Different
treatments. I mean, it's still farming, it doesn't change. So the bees, the thing is about bees too, they're very scheduled. You know, there's everything's kind of routine set. So every 21 days, you'll have a new brood. Every 24, you know, there's drones coming out, you know, everything's kind of set depending
certain
on the time and the day.
Check.
Yeah. So once you kind of figure out what kind of the bees do, you can kind of manage around them.
And it'd be different, I think, practices in different areas, right? Like when we were looking at getting into beekeeping, it was hard to find information that was relevant to like this weather system, this area. You know, a lot of things are for down south or sometimes even different countries. So it's checking those resources and making sure that it's like, okay, this actually applies to me. This is something I don't have to worry about. Picking up the tips and tricks everywhere.
Yeah, there's a good resource and for this area. It's Beekeeping for the Western World. Got the book here somewhere anyways, so it's pretty much my bedside read all the time. But that one pretty much sets to our area, which is pretty good. It's pretty much BC and Alberta. Yeah, and it's good for that one. And
also register with like your area too, the BC Honey Producers Association.
Well, the BC government, you got to register with the BC government. It's a free register, but you got to register where they're at and how many hives you have.
They want to track, right, and get the information on the bees and have some data and seeing what the trends are, and especially like you said, tracking the disease and the mites and stuff. That's all part of it.
Yeah, they kind of do a bunch of programs, but the BC government actually has a lot of good resources on their webpage too, so a lot of forums and stuff like that. And they do in January and going into February, I think it is, every Saturday they have a free webinar that you can join in, and it's basically beginning beekeepers. And kind of starts you off, and it's totally free. I totally recommend to any kind of new beekeeper to go check that out.
Every Saturday for the month, and they cover different subjects for a couple hours, but they go through all like everything you would need to know. Mm-hmm. So
start something off.
Yeah. There's a lot of different resources out there that people can access. So
now, just like other farm couples, you know, it's also the balance of working together and work and play together. And I think you have a special situation that you've kind of shared the tasks of, you know, the production piece, but then also the marketing piece. Do you want to kind of explain how you made that work for you too?
Oh, it's a constant navigation actually in process. It's been interesting though.
Yeah, it definitely has. We've kind of taken on roles to it.
Different departments.
Kind of different departments. Yeah, we've kind of set it up. And so we kind of work with each other on all these. But one person finally takes the lead and says, hey, this is the decision and this is the way we're going. So I run more of the operations aspect to it.
For sure.
I definitely love having Colleen around for that. It's almost
joke
a must.
That I'm a glorified assistant. I'm just there to find his hive tool because he set it down somewhere.
or carry some things. It's really nice with two people into a hive. Like you can do it yourself easily. They say about 150 hives you can run. So you're able to do that, but that's full time.
Yeah, a lot of lifting.
It's very heavy lifting. I've kind of knocked my honey supers down to mediums just for Colleen because
I can't lift the supers. Just when they're full of honey, it's
pretty heavy. So I kind of run more of the operation side and more kind of seasonal, but Colleen's definitely a big help in a lot of that because she'll remind me a few things. She's like, oh, what about this? I'm like, oh, right. I totally forgot about that, right? So she's good for that. Colleen has a real background in business.
And marketing is also something I like doing. So the social media pages, but then I was like, Cole, you can do the email and the website, but we got to work together in certain areas on certain things. So it's interesting too, because our work ethics, I think are kind of different processes. So it's like the balance of like, okay, respecting that. And then also that's a strength, because where I'm stalling, that's where you can pick up and, you know, just go through that. So it, yeah, just as constant navigation, like said.
Yeah. Colleen's a little more scheduled, where I'm more chaotic, which kind of works more with the operations side, because depending on the weather and depending what it is, I can go, oh, okay, today I got to go and do this, right? Because tomorrow it's going to rain or
manage those expectations.
Yeah. So it kind of, we definitely work out. It's like a yin and yang.
Now you mentioned the marketing and how Colleen's taking that on. It's, you know, often people get into farming because they like the farming part, the producing part, making things, producing things. But then you got to get them to your clients, or else it's not going to be a business and you're not going to be able to do it for long. So how do you want to just elaborate, like, how important you feel marketing is, or how much effort you put into that?
Yeah, definitely in today's day and age, it is, I would say, a must, for at least in some respects, for any kind of farmer to get into that. Definitely for diversity. And getting out to your clients and letting them know that you're actually here. That's kind of the biggest one, the constantly kind of going out.
Everything's online more and more. So it's just even managing that accessibility. So it's just, where do you want to go? What do you want to be? But also take advantage of that opportunity. You have free advertising on social media. You have a chance to educate people about your company and what you're doing, and, you know, seeing the processes. So it's just, how could you not? Almost at this point, you really need to have that shift. And we like doing some of the markets too, like in person, right? So going to different sort of fairs and events. Like, yeah, getting your name out there and getting a chance to meet people and establish that customer base. Yeah.
And that relationship.
There's a lot of different layers to marketing, in my opinion. So taking advantage where you can and setting those goals.
And nowadays, I find definitely for the I would say many small businesses, and that would include lawyer, you know, smaller farms and family farms, right? Competition is out there every single time. So, you know, make use of that, right? You use that network. Social media and use that networking to really work out a lot of different people. And there's definitely a time aspect to it. You definitely have to spend some time at it. Don't expect to be a master at the beginning, because there's
it's a process.
We're constantly learning.
I get really impatient with that. I want to be there already. I was actually just saying the other day that I was like, I felt like we've been so reactive to some of this process. And I'm like, I just feel like we're constantly trying to catch up to what we're doing. And I want to be like ahead and not have to worry about some of these things. And this year, I feel like it's coming together. But I mean, that's how many years to get to that place, right? So goals.
Yeah, and we're not even done yet.
No, we're just getting started, right? Yeah. So
and once you get kind of the hang of it, I also recommend to maybe get some other people on your team that kind of know a little bit more.
Build your circles,
definitely. We got a few people that we can definitely reach out to on all aspects. We're talking marketing, we're talking operations. There are definitely some beekeepers out there, and definitely in our area that's way more experienced than I am and has tons of knowledge. Beautiful knowledge,
great resources.
The honey producers are really good for that. Reach out to your internet.
There's usually local people, providers too, right? Beekeeper club.
Yeah, there's Peace Beekeeping
Club.
You can
join and ask questions, because there's just so much we don't know, and we want to help the bees, you know, and it's hard to just watch them, you know, an entire hive that's like thousands of little bees, right? Cleaning that up, it's heartbreaking sometimes. So trying to, have those connections and resources is really helpful.
Now, bees have a really important role as pollinators also. How do you see, like, kind of, you know, you said we scratch the bees' back and they scratch our back. How do you see the bees fitting into the bigger picture in the Peace region in agriculture?
Yeah, absolutely. I talk to a lot of farmers in the area, and there's a few farmers that definitely know, and they want their bee or want our beehives on their land. I constantly get pollination contracts or for us just to do it, because there's
there's no basically shortage research of location options.
Yeah, I mean, it's totally open. People. So it's kind of a fight a little bit, and there's not many around, but there's about a 20 to 30% yield increase. You know,
there's benefits to having
pollination in your area, right? Yeah. So, and there's a two, well, I would say probably more closer to a 3 to 5 kilometer radius that the bees can go.
At least.
Right. It, like they won't fly out that distance, but they can go out to that distance, right? Cover so them. Even if a farmer has bees close and they don't even know it, they're pollinating.
They're benefiting from it.
Yeah. And so a lot of these people's like, well, I want little, bees in my garden. Right. I want them to pollinate my apple trees. I want to pollinate like my flowers. I want to pollinate that.
Just with a cute little hive out front.
They want that. And they don't kind of realize the fact that these bees are way larger and they have a way big area. And they might not even certain times of years, they're looking for certain pollens. They're looking for certain nutrients. They're looking for, certain vitamins within the flowers. So they might not even touch your
ecosystem.
Yeah. They might not even touch your apples, or they won't even touch your, they'll go for the dandelion. Right, they'll go for the weeds, right? Because it's a lot more.
They need that nutritionally diverse diet, just like everybody else does.
And just the overall population, and we're not just talking about like agricultural wise. I mean, we're talking like native, forage and stuff like that. Pollinators are absolutely essential to our ecosystem. So not just us, but the native bees kicking around, our butterflies, you name it. It's hummingbirds. Yeah, you name it. So it's, but there's definitely an increase of yield for most farmers that grow. I would say probably your peas are probably a good one, I would suspect. I've never actually read any study on those, but we definitely need to grow our food. So it's big in the Peace region and anywhere else.
Well, that's what they say too. The benefit to the area is that we have large, different seed crops, right? So there's lots of different flowering crops at different times. So you got to pick and choose where your hives are and what you can benefit from. So last year, everything was so dry at the end of the season, but the sunflowers, did great.
Yeah,
but the clover dried up.
Yeah, we had trouble with the clover, but people that had made their second cut of hay with alfalfa.
Right.
If you had a beekeeper that was close to that, we were scrounging. We were like, hey, look, looking for those. Yeah, leave it. Or
don't cut yet.
Yeah, that second cut was really big for the bees because that alfalfa came back and those bees had something to get to, right? So people that was close to some hay fields did really good. So we were unfortunately not close to that, but I definitely talked to other beekeepers that pulled off some really good yields.
Talking to the neighbors, do some guerrilla gardening. I'm just kidding.
That's fascinating. I never thought about that. It was very dry last fall. And people would have been wanting to cut every single blade of everything for feed. And
weather's a significant impact on the bees. Last
year, we were about 2 weeks behind on everything. So the dandelions, the willows, late season came out. So the willows came out late, the dandelions came out late, and the bees had trouble trying to play catch up. So by the time the clover came up, and you were fighting with them and swarming and a bunch of other stuff that was going on, the bees either were just ready for it or weren't ready for the clover. So the clover came in, bees were just scrounging to go get it done.
And within a week, it was just brown and dried up. Like
clover hit really bad, right?
Basically, it just fried all the flowers.
Yeah, and this year looks about the same. So we're guessing we're about 2 weeks behind on everything. So we're keeping a close eye out.
Starting hot.
Those willows are nice. They're bringing in pollen now. Which is really good. So the willows are kind of essential.
Yeah, they're finding pollen, and were they even bringing in nectar?
Yeah, bringing nectar from the willows. So
they're already pulling. They're already busy getting work for the season.
Busy bee. I did have that experience where we had a hive very close to our garden, and I was so excited about that pollination service. But yeah, you're right.
It's like a bee highway. You could watch them just flying everywhere.
But you could watch them come out of the hive, and they would turn absolutely the other direction away from the garden because there was way more fascinating stuff over there.
Yeah, they'll kind of go with the dandelions. Like blueberry, my understanding with the blueberry farmers down south, they get a little upset because the bees will go to the other field.
Or the weeds, or anything else.
Blueberries don't have that much nutritional load, right? So compared to other things. So, I mean, you'll get the pollination, right, somewhere down the line, but it's not kind of a guarantee that that's what they're looking for that day.
And that can be hard on the bees too.
It's like us and humans, right? I mean, we don't, as much as some of us may want to, and we're all eat just beef kind of deal, we kind of need our vegetables and potatoes and everything else. We need a variety, and the bees are the same way. They need a variety and diverse food system.
So doing the crops, yeah, mm-hmm. there's certain ones that are really good.
Now, I got to ask you, some beekeepers seem to like dress up full on, you know, like they don't want to get stung. And some people are like super hardcore. They wear like nothing. So what kind of a beekeeper are you?
I've learned to wear for Colleen's sake more than anything else. So I was one of those beekeepers who went in with shorts and sandals and everything else. Once I kind of got used to it a little bit, I wore a half suit to begin with, and then I dropped it for a bit. And it was fun.
His reactions are a lot different. I must say, like when he gets stung, he's like, I think I was stung here. And when I get stung, like I swell up and it's not nice. So I'm both, like, actually, that's what, when he told me he wanted to be a beekeeper, I was like, I need to get a full body bee suit. Like, that was my very first reaction. Like, okay, so I'm going to need the full on suit, right? And, you know, maybe even we'll add gloves. But the gloves are hard to work with. But, and I got steel toe boots to be out there doing it. So it's just having my bee equipment, and it's good.
There's a sense of confidence when you put your veil on, so you can get a little bit deeper and stuff like that.
But sometimes it's hard to see through.
It's hard to see through. So I won't have my veil most of the time on. And if I start feeling the frequency or the bees getting a little riled up, I get a sense now of where they're at. And that gives, I'll flip my veil.
And they'll be nice and it's good. Other times they're all flying everywhere and the whole yard's just.
Yeah, I'll flip my veil to kind of give a sign to Colleen to do the same kind of deal. Going like, hey, I'm going to get.
I practically come out of the vehicle now and I'm suited up. Yeah. So it's like, I got my big fear, actually, that was the other thing. So I had a full body bee suit. And then I was like, but what if I get stung in the eye? It happened like twice and I survived, but it wasn't my favorite. Cole didn't like that. He felt bad. But
that was my learning lesson. That was my, okay, I'm going to put my veil when I'm getting
into it. I'm going to wear the veil. Yeah. And I was like, I don't even want to take it off till we're driving away just in case, you know, but then there's bees in the vehicle and the kids don't really like that. Sometimes
they'll hear it and stuff like that. It's amazing. There's always kind of a fear with that, and I get that a fair bit.
There is the potential to get stung.
There's always a potential against stung,
and it happens. But
they're really docile
in self defense.
Yeah, they're really docile and stuff like that. Part. And if you're really careful and you kind of talk to the bees and you've kind of,
unless they're an aggressive hive, because we seem to end up with one.
We always end up with one hive that's kind of aggressive. So,
but usually they're good.
Yeah, usually they're good. So the traits of a bee can vary. So you can get kind of an aggressive hive, but you can get also a very docile hive, right? Which is, they're really nice. They just kind of poke their heads up at you and say, hey, how are you, right? And there's ways and tricks around it, but most of the time they're really nice and calm, right?
And there are certain traits that you do look for. So sometimes the aggressive hive, they're higher producers and they can be a lot more hygienic. So they're just generally like stronger. But to work with them, it's like, you know, do I want that? Or do I want something that's nice and like does a good job and should be good? So there's always those traits as well to look for and see. And that's like beekeeping. Where do you want to be? What do you want to do? Right? Different options.
It's the same thing with any other livestock, right? Like what do you want to breed for, right? Yeah.
Looking for production. Do you want to be selling honey? Do you want to be selling bees? Do you want to be... There's different ways that you can go within the industry as well, right? So that's what's unique about business. It's whatever way you want to go.
Bees with character. I didn't know that was a thing. That's so awesome.
Oh, totally does. Like I have one, and I call it my dick hive.
No.
So, and the reason why I do it is because they're kind of aggressive.
They're the
and
sometimes ones they're that mean. You open the lid and they're flying for your face.
Yeah, they're kind of mean, but I tell you what, every single year they are my highest producing hive.
They do really well, so, and I kind of struggle.
That's why
with
I kind
that.
Of love them. So I actually enjoy them. I think they're great, but I'm always a little bit leery. I that's the only hive I'll flip my veil on before I go in.
You need to.
Kind of need to, yeah. But they definitely have character. They have character. They have personalities.
And they can feel what you're feeling too, because if you're getting frustrated or anxious, they're getting irritated, and you can hear, like I said, the buzzing that you mentioned earlier with the frequency and stuff. Like we had a queenless hive at one point, and you could actually just hear the difference in that hive compared to all the other hives. So having more than one hive, even if you're just a hobby, having two hives is good, so you have something to compare and just seeing, you know, what the trends are and learning from those. Hopefully be a fast learner, right? The expense of the bees. But yeah, it's a lot to learn for sure.
Well, thanks for sharing so much of what you have learned. And I'm sure your journey is still nowhere near finished.
Oh, yeah. We haven't even scratched the surface yet. So
there you go. Yeah. Well, that's what keeps it interesting too, right? Now, is there something else about beekeeping that maybe we didn't touch on and you're like, I really got to share this piece about it?
Probably ours when it comes to beekeeping. Yeah. I recommend, if you don't want to get into beekeeping, I always recommend to everyone to at least go look at a hive and be in a hive.
Do a tour,
walk in there. You can be totally suited up. You can do whatever you feel comfortable with, right? And definitely the coolest thing I ever see is actually the children. We've had a couple of tours where the kids get in there and there's a little bit of fear in there, but after they get in there, it's amazing.
She's right into it.
It was amazing. So it's totally a family oriented stuff too. It's really good to have.
And there's a tradition too with speaking with the bees and telling them about important events and things that are going on. And the concept or idea was that, like, if you take care of them, they'll take care of you. So it's telling them about important things, and then you're going to get better harvests and have a better relationship. So, you know, there's stories and traditions around beekeeping, and it's been a practice that goes back, I don't even know.
Before written
history.
Like
a long time. Yeah.
I would say it's probably one of the oldest professions around. So I would like to argue anyways. So yeah.
Actually, Google the primitive beekeeping was an outfit, and it's like this woven basque. It's very interesting images. So yeah.
Yeah, I definitely recommend getting into a hive, at least looking at that and talking to the beekeeper, because it'll amaze you and how well you walk away from that and feeling so much better.
Just the experience.
Yeah, just the experience.
Connections.
Yeah.
Now, if somebody is curious about what you have to offer and all the fascinating products that you were talking about, where would you direct people?
Like I said, I'm all about the social media. So we have Facebook, it's Nordic Vale Honey Farm. And then, you know, hashtag on Instagram, it's just all one word, Nordic Vale Honey Farm. And then we also have a website. So
yeah, our website is www.nordicvalehoneyfarm.ca. So we don't like to split off of that.
No, it's all very, yeah. Even our Gmail is like Nordic Vale Honey.
Yeah. Yeah, you always know
gmail.com.
Yeah, try to stay consistent with that one. And then you'll also find us in probably most of the markets.
A lot of the local
around
markets.
Dawson. We'll hit a couple in Fort St. John. We have one coming up on the 6th here. So follow on our Facebook. We'll have all those markets up there, right? We've got a few more set in place.
We always have it posted on social
media. So we're always going to be at pretty much.
But yeah, we're online if you want to order through there as well. And then, find us locally at markets and on social media. Yeah, those are the main ones.
Excellent. We'll make sure we direct people there.
Yeah, thank you.
So thanks again for taking the time and sharing just a wee kernel of your knowledge and experience. And I'm excited to see what's all coming still on your journey.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having us. Yeah, it's been fun.
Yeah, we really appreciate that.
Welcome back. I hope you had fun listening to this chat with the lovely folks from Nordic Vale Honey. If you would like to check out some more of their products and the cool things that they're developing, check out their website at nordicvalehoneyfarms.ca, or if you're a visual person like me, follow them on Instagram. This episode concludes the first season of the Knowledge for Resilience series. I hope you had an educational and fun journey getting a glimpse of the many great commodities that are being grown and produced right here in the beautiful Peace region. If you found value in this or other episodes of the Knowledge for Resilience series, please share it with your friends, family, and colleagues, and anybody you can think of. You can find us on various podcast platforms, including Podbean, Spotify, iHeartRadio, Google Podcasts, and of course, our partner association websites. Wherever you tune in from, make sure you like, subscribe, and follow us so we know that you would like us to make some more of this content, which we will in season 2. So stay tuned and keep the recommendations coming. Funding for this entire first season of the Knowledge for Resilience series was provided by the BC Hydro Agricultural Compensation Fund. Thank you so much for making this project possible and supporting local agriculture in the Peace and beyond. If you would like to get in touch with us or maybe be featured in season 2 of our podcast, please email us at coordinator@peaceforage.bc.ca. In the meantime, stay informed, stay resilient.